Auckland FC are introducing a new program called The Next 50. The idea is to try and keep 50 young women in football between the ages of 10 and 15. And when you think about the growth of women's football globally, you do sort of have to ask the question, really? Is there such a disconnect? Well, to help answer the question about women's football and young girls in football is the GM of football operations for the Waikato Bay of Plenty, and that's Alida Shanks. Morning to you.
Morning.
I didn't think there was such a big disconnect.
Yes, and so we do have a huge growth in our women and girls in football, which is awesome. But we also, girls and women only make up 25% of our playing population. So the boys are actually, the men are still growing as well, which is great for football. But we also have around a 65% retention rate. So while we are growing in both female and male football, we also lose quite a few each year. And because with both growing, then we're stuck at that 25%. So that's what we're trying to shift that ratio.
How do you intend going about it? And the Next 50, explain it.
Yeah, so the Next 50 is a really great initiative by Auckland FC and New Balance. And the reason I love it so much is that it's really a tangible initiative that they're doing. So there's gear for the girls. And one of the big challenges we see with female football, even still today, is that the girls and women are getting the hand-me-downs or the huge oversized shirts and the big socks and the shorts that fall down during the game because they're all the old kit from the men's or boys' teams. And so being able to buy their own kit. The other important part of that is New Balance do sports bras. And so for girls that are 10 to 14, that's when they start to go through puberty and their body changes. And that can make it a really uncomfortable or, just adds a new dimension, another dimension to playing sport. And so if you can have access to comfortable, supportive bras, that makes a huge difference.
I just wonder, though, that it's shocking to hear that women's football teams in clubs are being treated, like, oh, they're over there, they can have the hand-me-downs. I mean, it feels archaic, and you sort of begin to understand the disconnect.
Yeah, and it's not all clubs, obviously, but it's still a thing. And sometimes we don't even it might even be a conscious thing, but it's the girls and women again. Those sometimes getting the older kits where they train and where they play, they don't always get the number one pitches or the best time slots because your men's first team gets priority. And it's a generalisation, but that's often how our clubs, that mentality, because our club structure was developed in England 200 years ago for a very specific player, which isn't girls or women. So, and that's kind of that, the Next 50 refers to how women and girls were banned from playing football for 50 years. So it was introduced in the UK and it made it to New Zealand the next day, which is probably the fastest news to travel in 1921. Yeah. But they banned women from being able to book public fields to play football on. And in New Zealand in particular, they had that's how the teams were set up. They attached themselves to men's clubs and were reliant on access to public fields, and that got taken away. So women and girls only started playing football again officially in the early 70s.
Isn't it crazy to think we're still having to deal with the same sort of rubbish, though?
Yes, and that's the thing is that, and what I found in my research and in my job is that the same problems that we're facing in the 60s, the 70s, the 80s, the 90s, still happening today. And so that's why we still need initiatives like this to really put a spotlight on girls and women's football.
How does the Next 50 propose to identify 50 young girls?
So they had an applications process that they went through the end of last week. The girls and their parents had to answer some questions. I'm not across the whole process, but I believe they've selected 50 and they had to film a video of themselves answering a few questions, which I believe there's something special lined up for the game on Sunday, which the girls are all invited to for a pre-game presentation, which will be exciting.
Is this specifically an Auckland FC, so therefore meaning Auckland girls only?
It's not Auckland only. I know there's some girls from the Waikato that are going up for this that were selected. It's obviously Auckland FC running it, so it's kind of the upper North Island. I think the girls had to get their own way to Auckland if they were successful. But it's a great initiative just to get, I guess, get some momentum and to address some key systemic barriers around kit and opportunities for extra training opportunities.
Has there been any, shall we say, pushback from clubs about this? Or any sort of negative reaction, you know, when you're talking about, you know, the systemic issues that are still around?
No pushback, not that I've heard. Everyone's very positive about the initiative, which is great. I think Auckland FC have framed it really well by acknowledging our past, but making this a really positive initiative, which I think, real credit to them on how they've done that, because we often don't like to talk about, you know, the bad things in our history. But if we can own that narrative and accept that's something that happened, then we're still paying the price with our girls' numbers so low, but growing. So we're moving in the right direction, but in good participation numbers, but we need to start looking at those systemic barriers and addressing those.
From a local perspective, Waikato Bay of Plenty, are you seeing growth in women's football, young girls' football?
Yes, we had a 15% growth in our youth girls last year. So a really strong growth. We've introduced a new league this year to cater for our under 15 girls, which is awesome. So there is a growth, and it's the key for me is keeping them in the game. How do we make sure they have a really awesome experience when they do play football, so that they stay in football?
How important is it trying to find the right coaches? Because that always seems to be an amateur. For amateur sport, the hardest thing, finding coaches.
Definitely. Finding coaches is really tricky. And that's something that that Waibot Football and New Zealand Football are really investigating and exploring. We New Zealand Football run women's only coaching courses, which have been successful to a point, but it's still really tricky to try and encourage women to take part in those coaching courses. And some of them, they run for 4 days. And so you have to commit to 4 full days for some of those senior coaching courses. And that's a long time. If you're a mum, if you're working, if you've got, you know, got the kids, got the household, that's a big ask, to a big commitment to make. So I think we just need to have a look at how we can make those coaching courses a bit more accessible, perhaps demystify, because often a woman will show up to a coaching course and she might be the only woman on that course, and that can be a bit daunting. But the reality is the blokes often don't know as much as she does anyway, so it's kind of it's just that they might be a bit more bravado, but it's awesome to see them.
You threw some shade there. Wow. let's talk about the other side of your life. Football historian. Now, are you in the process, or have you completed a book on the history of women's football?
It's in the process of.
Okay, so what drives this?
So I've been involved in football since I was a teenager. I've been involved in club committees, and I've worked in football for about over 10 years now. And I've had mixed experiences, some really great experiences and also some real challenges. And that led to doing a PhD, which I completed 2 years ago. And that's then leading to the book, because what I found was that when women started playing football again in the 70s, we had these women's football associations popped up around the different regions. So there was one in Waikato, one in Otago, and all over the country, and they were running women's football because the men's associations wouldn't do it. But then in 1999, we had 23 men's regional associations and 18 women's, and they merged to form what are now the six federations, Waikato Bay of Puni being one of the six. And we often talk about those 23 men's associations, but I worked in football for, I think it was 6 years, and had no idea that there were even women's football associations had existed. And these women were the pioneers. They had national tournaments every year. It was in a different town every year. So there would be a team from every region would go to Napier or to Invercargill, was 1 year. They had an absolute blast. And they spent most of their season fundraising to get there. And it was a week-long tournament. And the winning of the tournament was shared around different regions. I think Auckland and Wellington were usually the came out on top, but then there's no record of this anywhere. So part of the aim of the book is to talk to women who are involved, who were volunteering and working for these associations, and find out their stories and tell those stories, because we just they've been lost, and really need to keep those voices loud, because what's made it possible today for our girls is the work that those women did in the 70s and 80s.
Well, you've just taught me something. I didn't have a clue about the fact that there were 18 women's association, football association. So that's a good start. When do you expect the book to be out?
Hopefully next year. It's taken a bit of time to bring this together, but to be expected, because trying to find the women and to to listen to the stories and to collate that into a book is perhaps taken a bit longer than I had hoped, that I anticipated. But they're great stories, and looking forward to bring that to life.
Aletta Shanks, thanks for telling us about the history and the future of women's football. Appreciate your time today.
My pleasure.